Morning, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you, one that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation and diversion for you and your family. Did you fail to dress up for tonight's show? No tie, an old shirt and slacks, a house dress? Well, don't give it a thought. We're glad you came as you are. We just want you to enjoy yourselves. Don't forget to visit our refreshment center during the intermission or any time. You love the tasty array of snacks we have to offer. So will the youngsters. Everything is quality and so good. We hope you'll make this a weekly visit. Bring the family. Bring your friends. There are always wonderful new pictures to see, delightful snacks to nibble, a gay, pleasant evening for all. Oh, a word of caution. Don't drive over 10 miles an hour in the theater area for your safety's sake. And Mom or Pop, go with the kids when they leave the car. We hope you have a wonderful time. Come back soon.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Hello.
Good. How are you? We have awkward silence.
Yeah.
Hi, Steve. I'm glad to be back on your show. George and I are excited.
Yeah, this may be, I don't know if you meant this as being the most southern of all of the Monsteramas you've done.
Okay.
You're the only one in the world to pick up on that.
Well, William Girdler, William Griffey, H.G. Lewis.
You mean south of Florida?
Gilliam Girdler.
Well, Miller was out of Kentucky.
That's true, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we're glad to be here to talk about the September show, which is coming up next week at the Riverside Drive.
Do you want to introduce what we do?
And I am Gene, and this is George, and we are the folks behind the Super Monsterama. And, George, how many years have we been going with this? How many years has this been?
It's 2007, so this is 16 years. This is the 17th one in September now, 17th, I believe.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Is that right?
For the original.
Yeah.
And the original, the first in the original, seldom imitated but never matched. So we're very excited, Steve, to be doing our 17th annual show.
We're excited. When I started this, trying to do this at a theater, nobody wanted anything to do with a horror show, horror marathon, anything like this. And the Riverside, you know, they were the champions. They were game. They were young theater owners. They said, "Yeah, we're into this. Let's try it." And we did it for one weekend, and then we kept doing it every year, and now it's a nationwide phenomenon, I'd say. There's, you look at all the different monster chiller horror theater all-night events that go around drive-ins.
Right.
They're thriving,
right.
And drive-ins are thriving,
and
these kind of events are a big deal now.
Yeah. And then you got some that think they're the best because they are on TV. Woo!
What?
Other drive-ins that think they originated showing monster movies at the drive-in because they have a TV special of something that's about 4 or 5 years old to come on this month.
Okay, that's nice. Is that supposed to be like a comedy noise?
I don't know what the heck it is. I'm in complete silence here.
We're looking at having some of the best weather this weekend too that we've actually ever had, which is something that we're looking forward to. It's not that we've ever been really having any severe weather over the years, but this year we're going to be very warm in the mid-70s and the high 50s at night, which is spectacular. And so going into some of these monsteramas, which actually had like 40-degree weather at night and you know, it gets very damp out there in that field and the country, and it's going to be nice this year to have dry weather, and it's nice and warm. I'm looking at looking right now at the forecast for Pittsburgh. 79 is a high on Friday, 56 in the evening, 76 on Saturday, 55 in the evening. And that's beautiful. That's going to be
so
one of the best ones.
So very pleasant weather. Yeah, we're lucky that the summer is kind of carrying, even though summer
right.
officially ends, I think, is it this weekend or?
Saturday. It actually ends Saturday during
our show.
Oh, okay.
So we're
yeah.
like, we're on the cusp of summer ending, but, you know, you're going to get,
right.
you're going to get, still get, you know, nice days going into October where it's still semi-warm and not really
right.
fall yet. And
right.
we got lucky with this time because. We, you know, we're at the mercy of Mother Nature with this thing.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's an outdoor thing, and it's rain or shine. And, you know, we've had rain in the past. We've had cold. But we've always
right.
got through the weekend, and we've always had people, you know, bear it out and have a good time no matter what. But I'm
right.
sure they're
Which
a lot
fantastic.
Happier when you don't have to worry about dampness or humidity
right.
or, you know,
right.
anything that's unpleasant. The more pleasant the weather, then... The more happy everybody is, of course, including us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Usually so
Friday, when it comes to the show in August, we don't have to worry about the weather. It's usually the other one in March, or is it May?
I think it's called
April
Ghoul's Monsterama, so it's April.
Yeah, April. Yeah. That way, we usually, most people have to worry about freezing their butts off then.
We were going to do a show in February, but we just couldn't, we didn't know how that would work, so. Anyway, so let's talk about Friday. So Friday night, we have quite a lineup of movies. George, you want to kick it off?
It's a southern
drive-in
lineup.
Double feature.
It's a southern
right.
Weekend.
Right.
Yeah, the ultimate drive-in double feature to start it out with.
Like why do you? I mean, that's a famous double feature, Steve. Right, Blood Feast
yeah.
and
2008.
So do you think we're it's good that we're you know kind of repeating history with that because that was the intention. We were going to do a whole H.G. Lewis night, but
right.
I'll get to that why we didn't in a minute. And then we just decided to, like, you know, Gina and I were talking about this. I'm like, let's just do the double feature. Let's do the first two because they work well in a drive-in. And, you know, it's not overkill. If you're not a big H.G. Lewis fan, you're still going to have other options that night. But it is a
yeah.
famous double feature because they did play together. And sometimes it was like a triple feature with Call Me Blood Red, which was almost going to happen, too. But like I said, we
right.
just decided to just keep it as a double feature.
Well, I think you did it good because those two are really good ones, Blood Feast and 2000 Maniac.
Right, right.
They're fun. They're absolutely fun. They're very colorful. They're lurid. They're gory. They're over
the
top.
The prints are beautiful. Yeah, it's probably
yeah.
his best work. Probably his best work, especially Blood Feast. If you had to choose one movie to show someone that sort of exhibits the, what, I mean, exhibits, is that the word I'm looking for? That's an example of
exhibits,
H.G.'s
yeah.
work. Yeah, that's exactly it. I want to also shout out that he was from Pittsburgh. He was a burger as well. So that's yet another contributor to the horror world from Pittsburgh, like Romero and some of the others.
Yeah,
H.G. was
started
a Pittsburgher.
He was born in Pittsburgh, moved to Georgia, and then because
right.
he wanted to make nudist camp films, he moved down to Florida.
Yeah.
Well, it was a lot warmer down there, I'm sure.
I
think this is also an anniversary year, George. It's not an anniversary year for some of his work.
Absolutely.
As well.
This is it turns out, and we've definitely played up to it that this is the 60th. The 60th anniversary of the release of Blood Feast. So we're doing,
wow.
I think we're the only ones. I mean, the year is almost over.
Amazing.
So this is like the official 60th anniversary
amazing.
Screening of Blood Feast.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Totally amazing. Good stuff. So if you've never had
and
an
like
Egyptian
I said,
feast come out on Friday night.
Film is only a little bit over an hour, so it's, it's painless.
Right. Very.
Good, clean fun.
Yeah, and 2000 Maniacs is just plain fun.
Yeah, that's
right.
Now you have the southern angle for sure in that one.
Yeah, definitely pure bluegrass set in a southern town where every 100 years a southern town who are massacred by the Yankees during the Civil War celebrate the centennial of the battle.
The Union soldiers during the Civil War.
Yeah, Union soldiers. I'm from down south, so we call y'all Yankees.
Well, you people still think you didn't win, you didn't lose too, so that's another one. Anyway.
Now the smart ones know we lose. We just indulge the stupid ones so we can laugh at them. Hey, yeah, go on, say something stupid.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and there's a lot of nuances with that film. It's very, very similar to other movies of the same nature. You know, it's a mysterious town that pops up. Did the kids really experience it? Did they didn't experience it? You know, both of these films are far more graphic than what we're usually showing, but it's the kind of gore that's extremely over the top, and it's pure exploitism. So it's the kind of thing that you see. I mean, I think they even, in the movie Serial Mom, they even exploited HG's work as being, you know, the kids were watching it in Serial Mom, you know, about how extreme he was. And I think that's part of, you know, I met the man several times. I think, George, did you meet HG as well?
Oh, absolutely. I have. He was at one of the very first Chiller Theater shows, if not the first one,
right,
that I remember going to in New Jersey when it was, you know, basically an auditorium with a bunch of vendors and, like, maybe three or four guests, you know. But, yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was a good guy. He had a lot to say about it. We talked about this in Roger Foley's show. He said that, you know, that word of mouth actually is more successful than millions of dollars worth of advertising. And I think that's very true with a lot of these productions, including ours. You know, we've advertised a lot, but, you know, our numbers have grown over the years from word of mouth. People are still finding out about it. I was out at two different events, two movie events, as I was telling George this past month, and ran into people wearing Monsterama shirts. In fact, I was sitting next to folks in the screening of the movie Phantasm that we're talking about coming to the drive-in next week. And it's crazy. And it's just, Monsterama has become a word on the street, a word of mouth of people. And that's one of the reasons why the numbers actually have gone up, I think. I think it goes up every year because of that. I mean, it's always a revolving cast of new people. But HG, you know, said that you don't always have to do something new. You can just do something that people know you're good at. And, you know, when you make those kind of films that he made, the super exploitation gore films, that became a name associated with that, which is one of the things that brought people out to see his show. So these are very standard films that you know, examples of his work. So it's a great honor to show these to people, especially those who are not familiar with his work. You know,
and
on
here's
the 60th
what's funny. Guess who found H.G. Lewis kissing me St. Cloud, Florida, to film 2000 Maniacs in?
Who?
William Gaffey.
Interesting.
And a lot of the crew that Lewis used in 2000 Maniacs was a lot of Griffey's crew from Florida.
Yeah, there is definitely crossover there, yeah.
Yeah,
Bill Kerwin do films for both directors?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm going to answer my own question because he's in the opening scenes in Impulse. So, yeah, and which we're showing. So, you know, it's a crossover right there. I was like, people were not really, like, overly familiar with life. I'm going to be like, isn't that the guy I saw in Blood Feast as the detective? And now he's playing William Shatner's in Impulse. He plays William Shatner as a kid the guy that's having an affair with his mother. So William Griffey, like I'm just answering my own question. William Griffey also used Bill Kerwin. So yeah, that's another example of like a crossover between William Griffey and H.G. Lewis as directors shooting in Florida. Because Bill Kerwin was the actor that was always in Florida exploitation movies.
Right, sure was.
You know, he did so many of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, when you start seeing this kind of stuff, it's interesting because we always talk about, you know, about these directors and about their genres in particular and the movies that they do. And then we start really looking into really dissecting, I think the word, I'm taking some strange words tonight, but we start picking apart, you know, what is regional filmmaking. You know, it becomes a real discussion. And you can start lumping a lot of folks into regional filmmaking, that things are specifically for a certain region that was something big in that region, like the Wisconsin guy, like Bill Remain. There were so many, you know, and Steve, you brought this up a couple of days ago when you sent the link out to us about, you know, the Southern, you know, horror directors and writers and stuff, and especially around the Florida area. And it's amazing the amount of stuff that was pumped out of that area back in the 70s, quite a bit. You know, you're looking at
two directors
here in particular, right?
Yeah.
You know, so much
a lot of Florida
William
guys
Griffey
like
stuff.
Griffey.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm just saying.
Really started
it's
because the drive-in owners in Florida would hire them to film their own movies. You know, film movies specifically for their drive-ins, so they wouldn't have to pay a distributor. But then they would take their films once it played out in their drive-ins, and they would take them to the sub-distributor and distribute them all over the South.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, didn't H.G. Lewis distributed his own film? Dave Friedman?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how he met...
Dave
That's
Friedman?
How he met Friedman, because he was trying to sell his nudie film, his first one, and he couldn't sell it to nobody, but he knew that Friedman had connections, so he went to Friedman, and thus the partnership started.
Right.
That was a great partnership. Dave Friedman was like another really nice guy that I met, and then just, you know, typical, like... you know, guy with this producer was holding a cigar, very like, you know, enthusiastic, and just another one that did all kinds of exploitation movies.
Sure.
And you know, these were the two H.G. Lewis, the two of the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So okay, that's
well, it's like you know,
thing.
Like over the year, I mean, 17 years or 17 events that we've done this. Over the years, I mean, people have asked, like, would you show H.G. Lewis? Would you show H.G. Lewis? And at the beginning, I was kind of like, I don't know. You know, I had mixed feelings about it, but I realized, yeah, he is.
No, I think it was
he
time.
Is driving.
I think it was something that we talked about for a while.
It was inevitable. No, Gene was, like, definitely pushing for some H.G. Lewis, and he's totally right
sure.
in this. Yeah.
Sure, because we've seen September go in a very experimental direction, so... You know, April locks down pretty much what, you know, you get with the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, or just 80s in general films. That's the genre
I keep saying this is the most April Gould's-like September month. It's almost like an April. Several of the films that we have on this program, and by several, I mean exactly two, right, are... were going to be shown at the April Ghouls that didn't happen because of COVID.
Right.
When we had to
yeah,
cancel
sure.
it.
Sure. Absolutely.
Which was
absolutely.
I think 2020. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the spring of 2020.
There's
but
only
yeah, the
one film
about...
from that you know lineup that never happened that we haven't shown yet. So. You know, we're staying
well, you
true
know, the
to
thing
this
about, the thing about this is that this is also. You know, you sort of have a theme night going on Saturday night, but this Friday night is, other than the gore and stuff, is very, you know, it's very, it's all over the place.
It was a theme. There's cannibal. I call it cannibals,
place, which is what's exciting. Crazies
and cannibals. That's the theme.
Yeah, it's all over the place, and that's what's amazing about it. You know,
so. X-Nay on the Cannibal A for people who haven't seen one of the films.
I think they know already. So the segue to the second film, which is Impulse here. And Impulse, the showing our screening of Impulse is an actually really big deal, and this is something that George really brought to the table big time. So, George, go ahead, tell us everything.
I learned that Grindhouse was, you know, Grindhouse Releasing, a company who, you know, do distribution of exploitation films. You know, they have a handful of really good films that they you know, circulate at theaters, which we've shown some of them in the past. And they're also a Blu-ray company that do, like, really great special editions, and they take their time with them. So I'm sure you guys are familiar with them. I'm sure people listening are. But when I found out that Impulse was going to be like a theatrical release, so the booker from Grindhouse, like, you should consider this. And I'm like, you know, I actually am. And then that's when I said, you know what, I want to get Impulse in one of the nights, you know, instead of doing a whole H.G. Lewis night, I said, I'm going to break it up. I'm going to show, you know, the first Blood Feast and 2000 Maniacs instead of an entire night of H.G. Lewis films, because I want to get Impulse in there. So that's how I ended up getting booked in the third slot. And there's a great promotional campaign behind it. Grindhouse has been behind us all the way. They keep plugging our event. And this is actually the only drive-in theater that is showing Impulse. All the other places that's been playing around the United States have been regular hardtop cinemas. So I'm very proud that we're so far the first and only drive-in that's, you know, getting onto this, latching onto this re-release of this really wacky film with William Shatner.
Right. It's pretty indescribable, actually. But, you know, when you see it, when you
what
see
are your
it,
views
you realize
of,
how
have
it's
you
tuned,
seen Impulse, Steve?
How it's tuned.
No,
have you seen
like
Impulse?
I said, it's always been a pretty hard to see film from Griffay. It's one of the few films left of his that still have prints left that wasn't in the William Griffay, which is
collection.
This film, Grindhouse had to use like the best prints possible to make this new 4K DCP. Which they also used the same transfer for a Blu-ray, and because like all the prints were faded, and it did get out there in like budget VHS and even budget DVD over the years, but I don't even know how legit those were, or how many people saw them. So this really is an obscurity for a lot of people until this Grindhouse releasing re-release on Blu-ray and now the theatrical run of it.
And a beautiful version of it, too. I mean, it says that there is, as always, you know, when you get these movies, it always says, you know, reproduced from the greatest, the best, the best
elements,
source.
And
the sources are really
it's
good.
It's almost like, some of these companies, they're so humble, and they do such good work, but they feel like a need that, you know, like, we got to apologize that this isn't, like, the most pristine. But then you watch it, like, this looks great. What are you talking about? You know, we didn't even expect it to look this good. So, you know, shout out to Grindhouse for doing the Impulse disc that they did is just terrific. And, you know, if you want to own the film, you know, Grindhouse Releasing is selling the special edition. Plus, we're going to have a copy in our raffle basket, which we'll talk about later. But that also, that package also includes a autograph of the director, William Griffay, so that's
yeah, and also
special.
Bill Van Ryn, who does Groovy Doom, Driving Asylum, who's always worked alongside of us, kind of like a sister project or whatever, to our work. We've always been, interchangeable here. We do things with Bill and vice versa. Bill did one of the extras, a collection of different ads and stuff.
Yes.
So, you know,
newspaper
they're
fantastic. It's such cool to see what, like, it played with. And it was playing, like, it's a 1974 release. I think it was shot in 73, but it seems like it was mostly you know, playing primarily in 1975. And, right. You know, you could see, like, from the ads that he's collected for this, you know, it definitely played a lot of drive-ins back in the day, and it was a lot of different double features.
Right,
like,
right.
But the best ad that he got, in my opinion, because it's just hysterical, it says something like the captain of the Enterprise meets the devil woman of Rosemary's Baby. So
yes.
the captain of the Enterprise, William Shatner, but it's like, what are you talking about, the devil lady of Rosemary's Baby? Then I realized they mixed the actress Ruth Roman up with Ruth Gordon from Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
But it's Ruth Gordon that's an impulse. It's like, it just shows how, like, local yokels put these ads together, and they didn't even know what they were talking about, but it's funny, you know.
And Ruth Roman was actually the crazy mother from the baby, wasn't she? So she sort of had...
Yeah, the baby is her... You know, exploitation. You know, finest hour. That movie.
Yeah,
she had her
whole career before that too. She was an older, and aged Hollywood actress that kind of went into hagsploitation on some level.
Yeah, hagsploitation. Yeah,
you know. She was.
When
right,
you look back, they really weren't that old at the time. She was probably only in her 40s, you could only be a character actress at a certain age. It just shows how times have changed. Now, like, you know, Kate Beckinsale is like 50. You know, she's still a glamorous leading lady. I'm just saying, it just shows you how time changes. But
yeah.
Ruth Roman was in, I think she was in Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train. That
as
was
well.
One of her more,
yes.
So she was a 50s leading lady, and then she became a character actress. And we're actually showing another one of the movies she's in on Saturday night. So we're bookended with Ruth Roman movies that next weekend.
Yeah, it's amazing how many films always have crossover aspects.
And what's funny is that this Ruffay did as many movies as he did, but he was based in Florida and pretty much never has left Florida.
Right. Well,
even the studios like Live and West Die, Let Die, when they went down there,
right.
They used the wheels of...
Anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on the Brady Bunch. That damn Alice. Anyway, but, listen, before we talk about the last film, which I'm very passionate about, I wanted to mention, with the William Griffey's box set, you know, my two favorite films by him are Sting of Death and Death Curse of Tartu. Those are my two absolute favorites. And Death Curse of Tartu was a film that was like a regular, all the time being screened constantly, you know, here on Chiller Theater and stuff. It was always
yeah,
around.
which we can show, but I just don't want audiences to run in the different directions. But
yeah, exactly.
You know, they are colorful. You know, but I Steve, what is your what is Steve? What is your view of Impulse?
Oh, it's one of Griffey's better films.
I mean, do you think it works well in a drive-in? Because I'm very happy that we booked it. And it's mostly Shatner's overacting and his just larger-than-life persona and the supporting cast. It's just him working off like Harold Sakata and Ruth Roman and the little girl that plays his girlfriend's daughter. Yeah.
Kidding.
Jennifer Bishop is the actress that plays his girlfriend.
Stories about on the set how this was during Shatner's period in between Star Trek and his comeback in the late 70s with Kingdom of the Spiders and Star Trek the Motion Picture, that he was just going around going, I used to be famous, you know.
Well, he also did The Devil's Reign. There were some TV movies in there too. He was,
Shatner, I think that's a misconception. I said this before. Shatner did have some, you know, he did, supposedly he had a tough road after Star Trek was canceled where he was getting over a divorce and you know, he was like, you know, struggling a bit to keep his kids, you know, fed and so he was struggling a bit, but I think, you know, being who he is, he got work pretty quick. I mean, he did do a lot of commercials and he was always working.
That's,
you know,
really,
and he did a lot of TV,
right.
And
yeah.
And but this is
right.
one of the earlier features that he did after, you know, that late 60s Star Trek era. But like Gene was saying, like, he did The Devil's Ring. He actually had a couple of TV. Well, he had a show.
Yeah,
he had Barbary Coast in mid 70s,
right.
Which, but it didn't do well with Doug McClure, who's in one of the films we're showing this weekend too. But what I'm trying to say is he was always working, and he was always doing the game shows and stuff like Match Game. So,
yeah,
you know, he was always,
he
never stopped working. So, yeah.
Yeah, and don't forget, he was in one of the biggest drive-in hits of the 70s, Big Bad Mama, with Angie Dickinson.
That's right. That is absolutely right. And that is a great one. And him and Tom Skerritt also did The Devil's Reign together about a year after
Shatner was definitely
a drive-in king at one point, because, yeah, The Devil's Reign, Big Bad Mama, like you said, Kingdom of Spiders, which is absolutely terrific. And several others. We're going to show some. We have some really fun Shatner
trailers
from that era,
right,
that are going to show before the screening of Impulse on Friday night. So
yep,
get ready for that.
It's
going to be fun. It's Shatnastic or Shatnastic.
Yep. Shatnastic. Yeah. So
yeah.
Friday night ends with my favorite of the evening. You know, which I've been waiting for years at the drive-in. The amazing Shriek of the Mutilated, which is a very dear film to my heart, to the point that I've actually gone to the filming locations and stuff and taken pictures. I have an obsession with that movie because I started watching it on Schiller Theater when I was a kid, and it kind of has a shocking ending, but it's such a goofy exploitation film, just the quality of it, everything, that is just something that defines a genre, and it's something you have to see. So, you know, try to stay up late, don't miss it. It's
I'm
a beautiful remastered.
It's the only movie that you're ever going to see a Indian speak with a New York accent.
Correct. Very possibly. Right.
God bless him.
Well, I'll tell you something. Shriek of the Mutilated, like Gene was saying, he's been, this is like one of his personal favorites that he's been wanting to see. I've been wanting to show it. I think it's, you know, a lot of people mention this movie. But, like, we had to, again, it's like we waited for the time to be right, because there wasn't much out there. You know, we had, you know, prints, but they were probably faded and missing stuff.
And they were very incomplete, too. There were multiple
prints
out there.
There's always,
like,
stuff missing from,
like,
different prints.
Fan prints,
so,
and stuff, right?
Yeah, so a new 4K DCP was made, and it's like, well, I think the time is right. We got to show this now. And don't let it, just because it's in the quote-unquote asshole slot, last movie of the night, that don't let that hinder you, because it's worth staying up for, and I'm looking forward to being at the last one from the night.
Does the 4K print finally have popcorn added back into it?
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's complete.
Yeah, there was Retro Media released the DVD early on, and they couldn't clear the rights to that, so they had to take it out.
He refused to pay
it's restored now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it is restored, and for those that don't have any idea what we're talking about, Hot Buttered Popcorn was this, actually one of the very first techno songs ever written.
It's called Popcorn. The group was called Hot Butter. They were a one hit wonder. This was like a top 10 or top 20 hit in 1972.
It was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And
How it ended up in this movie, I have no idea, because it must have been before the days of licensing. It just ended up in the movie, and
I think they did have to get permission and everything, and I don't know how much they
did
paid.
Did they really
but,
back in the day?
Yeah, they did, because it's credited in the credits and everything.
Yeah.
And there might be a story about it on the Blu-rays extra, but I don't remember. But I think they did license it officially. It wasn't like they could just... I don't think they were, you know. But like the rest of the, as far as music is concerned, they didn't have a composer, so they used all classical musical pieces, which is public domain, because they couldn't afford a composer.
Right,
and I think it works. I think that works great for some reason. It's just very haunting to hear this, like, weird
It's
almost like the juxtaposition between what's going on in the movie and the classical music is... Just there's something about it that just makes it much more, I don't know,
it's just
eerie.
A weird,
and, yeah.
It's a very weird feel-good film. It has so much going on, and a little bit of what the plot is about here is there's a this college professor takes these kids on this expedition to this supposed remote island. In reality, they drove across the bridge in Croton-on-Hudson and in up above Manhattan in the area around. Hudson Valley area around Sleepy Hollow, Tarrytown, there's a huge reservoir up there and a big bridge that goes across it. And that sort of doubles as the bridge to the island. So the concept is that I think it actually takes place in Hudson Bay or something, is what they said. And they go on this expedition to find this Yeti, and supposedly there is a Yeti there. And then, you know, slowly the kids are getting killed, people are disappearing one by one, and it unfolds into this outrageously cuckoo plot. It's the end of the movie. You're just like, what the fuck did I just watch? But it's very tongue-in-cheek and very appropriate for a good chiller 1970s horror film. It's delicious is what it is. And for me, it's sort of a feel-good movie, you know? It's a total feel-good
movie. Oh, God,
You know, you throw it in,
and
it's so good.
And the cuckoo plot comes from, this is from a review, interview I read with the Amaros. One of the major props in the movie, well, let's just say it turned out to be a little bit shoddier than they expected. And they were like, what are we going to do? We can't afford to get another one. And then all of a sudden, Roberta said, well, let's work it in. We'll change the whole plot of the third act to make sure that we can say that this shoddy prop was on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I can kind of see that.
There is a connection to this movie, believe it or not, even though it was shot in New York, to the southern aspect and the Florida aspect, because the actress that's in there, Jennifer Stock, also starred in God's Bloody Acre, which was a Florida shot movie with Bill Kerwin. So everything actually links up in some strange way. On
and
Friday
this
night.
Was a major hit at Cyrus Drive-Ins during its time.
Shriek was?
Shriek of the Mutilated, well, for sure, it's a good drive-in film. And the same folks that brought you that, bring you that movie, also bring you the five movie Invasion of the Blood Farmers, which is also has a nice 4K. So that's another great film. It doesn't
Ed Kelleher, yeah.
It's filmed in the same exact area and everything, same style, same music, in fact, I think.
Shriek is from the Finleys, so this was directed by the late William Finley, who tragically died in a helicopter accident about 3 years after it was released. I still think this was released in 1974, but I think it was shot a few years earlier.
I think on the cusp of the 70s, 71 or 72.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I think
it sat around for a while.
Yeah.
It always struck me as a film that sat around for a while. So
yeah, definitely.
Definitely. So good stuff. So let's talk about the Saturday experience. What do we have on the Saturday? Okay,
well,
that's great.
Saturday with two William Girdler Saturday is basically two William Girdler classics and two Roger Corman Factory classics.
That's correct. And we mix it up. See, notice we didn't show the Girdler movies together?
Yeah, it's like Corman Girdler.
Yeah, well, okay. I'll keep you on. Yeah, because I just, you know, wanted to mix it up a bit. The Humanoids
right.
from the Deep, again, this is one of the ones that we had scheduled to play at April Fool's Drive-In Monsterama in 2020, which never happened because it was canceled because of COVID. And I'm very happy to bring this one back. This one is pure exploitation. I'm sure Steve knows all the backstory behind this one.
And James Horner's beautiful soundtrack, which is what I always bring up. James Horner's haunting soundtrack is one of the greatest parts of this movie, absolutely.
And Barbara Peters' great direction in the scenes that she directed.
Right.
And
right. Well, yeah, that's another controversy right there.
Barbara Peters.
It was a film that was secretly edited behind the actors' backs to be something completely different. And, you know, Roger Corman felt it needed to be a little more violent and a little more bloody. So that's what happened. But it's a great ecological thriller. I mean, it's another story that's about nature gone crazy and you know, human pollution and what can be the result of it. You know, that's basically what happens.
Well,
whatever
you want to say about the sensationalism of the beefed up scenes, you know, the combination of that with, you know, a good name cast that includes Vic Morrow and Doug McLaurin and
right.
Patel.
Sure.
The combination of that with the scenes and the like only 80 minute running time, this is a roller coaster ride of an exploitation monster movie.
It's a good film.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful movie.
And it's kind of an end of an era because I think after this film came out, not totally, but it seemed like horror cinema got more
flasher.
I don't know. It got more like comical and not as shall I say nasty. I mean nasty as far as like just you know, like we're gonna like you know, really give it to you. We're gonna give you something to be
going
to
really
like Scream
movies.
Like Roger Corman's Screamers, which is an Italian film that he picked up, The Island of the Fishman. That's another one. It's just exploitation.
And you know what else I think of? I also think of Without Warning from that time period as
well. Yeah, exactly. Without Warning is like an end of, because they're like it's late 70s, early 80s cusp, where it's like, you have films like that, and then you get into the more goofier, you know.
Even Phantasm kind of fits into that whole.
Yeah, it does.
Without Warning, is it such a Predator ripoff? They even hired the same actor to play the monster in Without Warning.
Okay, but the only thing is that happened before.
I know it happened first. That was a joke.
Yeah, it's about 7 years difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Without Warning is another one I'd like to bring to the drive-in one of these days.
The short way to describe Humanoids in the Deep is all of those creature from the Black Lagoon ripoffs in the 50s, except in this film, the creature from the Black Lagoon scores. So it's basically what all of us fans who felt bad for the creature in the 50s was waiting for.
Well,
I think that's paraphrasing something because I've read that somewhere before.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what else too. I believe Chris Wallace was responsible for the monster designs in this, and the monster designs are very unique in this movie. They have these weird long arms that kind of drag like prehistoric ape men or something, and these real round fish heads. They're and these brains. I mean, it's really a pretty gruesome.
I would describe them as very ambitious.
Yeah, extremely. There's some work done on these things.
The days of rubber suit monsters and it's very well done. The fact that they are rubber suit monsters, the organic quality to that as opposed to like CGI, which would be like, you know, the norm a few years later, makes this even more special. And it just works because they're really nasty. They really look nasty and they're scary. The part where they like do the home invasion and the, you know, of course during the salmon festival when they go
guy,
nuts.
The guy having half of his face ripped off in the surf. Watch for that on the big screen. I mean, it's pretty disgusting stuff, really.
Well, that's why it's the lead film on Saturday. For all the reasons
perfect.
We described. And we shamelessly shamelessly, you know, are proud of it because it's pure exploitation. It's a fun monster movie, but it's pure exploitation, and you know it belongs on with Monsterama. It belongs as part of this show, and I'm happy that it's the opening movie.
Agreed.
And next is what I call the two best Jaws exploitation movies ever made, and Grizzly is just better, 200 times better than it has any right to be.
Yeah, well, it's too bad Cocaine Bear is,
it's
too bad Cocaine Bear is forgotten because we could have harped on the tail of that. But like, you know, that movie was popular a few months ago, and now everybody's forgotten it. So if we had shown this at the Riverside when Cocaine Bear was still, people were still talking about it, you know, they might be more curious, but now it's just, we're showing Grizzly and that's that.
Well, and Grizzly does want to be the Jaws on land sort of thing with a grizzly bear, but it's actually a very well filmed, not a bad acted film or anything. It's actually a pretty decent production. I just sat through Grizzly and Grizzly 2, which was a nightmare, a lost film that was thrown together. It's really terrible. It's out there. It's available, I think, on Paramount Plus. I had heard about it for years, and we found a copy of it and watched it. But listen, here's the thing I want to mention. The way these movies flow on this Saturday night was that, you know, Piranha and Humanoids were always kind of back-to-back in the 2020 thing, and everybody loves to watch in their homes or wherever Grizzly back-to-back with Day of the Animals. So these are kind of companion piece films that all flow together here. They just happen to be, split up a little bit there, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, that was intentional. I mean, we could have showed Grizzly and Day of the Animals back-to-back, but I think they mixed it up a little bit because there are similar. I'm not going to say there aren't similarities. They're definitely similar. They're very different films, but there's Christopher George, there's Wilderness,
right?
You know, and there are similarities. So like, let's do something with monsters from the sea. Then we have monster in the wilderness.
Right.
Then we have monsters in the sea again, and back to the wilderness. It's a whole
Yeah, like I said,
and we've done these kind of films before. We've shown Frogs, we've shown Empire of the Ants, we've shown Food of the Gods very early on. And these kind of Nature Strikes Back movies always work well at the drive-in. I mean, you could definitely say that they were made for the drive-in because these things made in the 70s, they were exploitation movies made for the drive-in, the Nature Strikes Back.
I agree 100% on that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they used to play on bills with all kinds of, not necessarily another Nature Strikes Back, but you would have like Food of the Gods with Squirm and that kind of thing, and then maybe The Devil Within Her. Like, they'd mix it up, but long story short, these things, these Nature Strikes Back movies were made for the drive-in. So this is, again, it goes with this whole weekend. I think we're bringing back a lot of traditional fun things
themes, a lot of fun themes
that were popular back in the day, and you're going to get a real experience with this weekend. And I'm not saying it's only because I booked all the movies.
Right. And up next is Piranha with quite a few actors, actually.
Nick Miller, Paul Bartel,
important director, too.
Bradford Dillman.
Yeah.
Barbara Steele.
Richard Deacon.
Yep.
Yeah. He didn't win.
Rocky Rutherford's father himself.
Right.
Quite
a few people.
What is it? Heather Mills, right?
Paul Bartel.
who is married to Robert Urich.
The great
What's the actress's name from? Is it Heather? From
Logan's Run on TV series.
Jenny Gutter.
Huh?
No, that's the movie. Logan's Run, the movie.
Hold on. Heather Menzies was
Heather
was
Menzies.
Logan's,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I said Heather Mills. Yes.
Right.
She was great. You know, she was great. Yeah. She used to be on the Logan's Run TV series, so I had a crush on her as a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What's funny is when Joe Dante was making Piranha, the studio Universal was who made Jaws was threatening to sue them. And then Spielberg watched Piranha, and he's like, no, this movie's actually good, and it is a ripping off Jaws. Let's just let it go on out, you know.
I actually like Piranha. I like the original Piranha film, and I also like the the sequel Piranha 2. As cheesy as it is, I'm a big fan of that movie as well.
James Cameron.
Piranha is beautiful on a big screen, so that's something that's going to be. It's another first time shown, not to be missed production for sure.
And it's freaking hilarious. There's no way around it. It's freaking hilarious.
And
this was really funny.
Other one that was supposed to be shown in 2020. The one we had to cancel because of COVID.
Think it was that funny. I didn't find the movie that funny, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think it's scary or anything, but I didn't find it particularly funny. I just thought it was
comedy, like
exploitation.
It's got a lot of comic kind of relief. That's the way he makes
kind of
things.
Dick Miller
right.
and his second in command with them always fighting with each other. He's like, sir, the piranha. And he's like, I thought I told you not to say the P word.
Right, exactly. Well, and it is very similar to Jaws in a lot of ways with the denial of the shark or the fish being in the water and, you know, a resort and people being killed. But, yeah, it's still a beautiful film. It's a good film.
If you have it on Blu-ray, next time that they have the scene where Paul Bartel jumps up out of his bed when he gets the phone call, pause it and look at the newspaper he was reading. You'll see some very hilarious headlines on it.
That's not something
like,
I definitely will.
Yeah.
Now,
one of them says, woman kills husband and puts him in freezer. And the size he would make a good snack.
Nice.
Cute.
Now, Steve, yeah, you know, I know you have a lot of knowledge in trivia with this stuff. Wasn't there some like original casting choices for Piranha that didn't happen for whatever reason?
Yeah, the guy who starred in Colossus, the Forbin Project.
Right. Eric Braeden.
Eric
yeah.
Braeden.
Was he supposed to play Brad Pitt's part?
And when you see the main guy pushing the raft, that is a shot of Eric Braeden that they kept.
Huh.
Okay.
Eric Braeden was going to play with the role that Brad Pitt Dillman got. Is that right?
Yeah, Brad Dillman.
And they were both in Escape from the Planet of the Apes together. So there you go. There's some trivia for you.
Very weird.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up the reviews so we can talk a little about before Steve kicks us off about the actual festivities.
You don't have to kick us off. We don't have to go.
Yeah, you're going to keep us for a while. You're going to pull the plug.
Yeah,
the
keep
here.
Us for a while because we still got so much
good.
To talk about.
Good, okay.
But,
I'm DVRing Halloween Wars, so we can this can wait. So that can wait. So.
I am.
I'm not kidding.
Day of the Animals, Girdler, sort of companion piece to Grizzly. And it's the only film where you're going to see Leslie New- barehanded.
Right. Anybody want to
comment? Well,
we played
up the fact that Leslie Nielsen is in this in the trailer that was made for this, for the event, because you know, we want more mainstream audience to realize that, you know, hey, you know, Leslie Nielsen did a lot of stuff before Naked
right.
Gun and all that, you know, an Airplane. So
yeah,
right.
And he is wild in this one. He's not a nice guy. Let's put it that way.
Definitely not.
It's like that's sort of the ozone drives him crazy, and he starts. He was a serious dramatic actor before Airplane and the Naked Gun series came.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, that's why his casting in that kind of stuff by the Zucker Brothers was like so brilliant, because
right.
you know, they're playing against type, and it's just like comically, it's brilliant. So when
right,
he did Airplane,
right.
and well, you know, Airplane was the first one that he did that in that vein, and it's just absolutely brilliant because he was so serious, and he seemed to take himself serious. But you know, he's just another gem of an actor all around, whether he was doing drama or TV movies or comedy.
Yeah, don't
he was
forget
just great.
Too, he ended up.
Yeah,
he also appeared in. Appeared in Creepshow too in one of the segments from
that's
the original
right.
Creepshow.
That was,
well,
that was after Airplane and during
right.
the time of the Police Squad TV series. So
sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
one of the best.
I can hold
one of the
my
best
breath
things he did
for a long time.
Yeah, and he did that '60s movie where what was that TV movie? It was supposed to be a TV movie, but they played in theaters where he was a detective. Oh God! What the hell is the name of that movie?
I don't remember that.
It's a black and white movie from the '60s, and Steve, you must know it. I'm drawing a blank.
I'll look it up. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah,
look it up because I'm drawing a blank too. Oh, I keep thinking
it's
the TV
short.
Movies.
It's very short. It's like an hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it played on a double bill with The Nightwalker, the Barbara Stanwyck movie.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking.
And it's got like this monster. It's a period piece, but it's black and white. And the monster was played by Werner Kumpler from Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. You know what else? We forgot to mention that he was in Poseidon Adventure, but he didn't last very long in Poseidon Adventure.
No, he didn't. No, he
yeah.
didn't.
I forgot about that.
That was always Irwin Allen's style. To get like a whole bunch of stars in the movie and then start killing them off randomly so you don't know who you're supposed to follow as the hero character.
I think with ensemble cast back in the day, he was doing a lot of ensemble cast, and you don't see those in movies today the way that was happening with the Irwin Allen films and such, and you know, he was one of the people that was on there, you know?
Well, that's like that goes back to what the William Gardler film star, you know, like, because he was trying to do the same thing, especially with Day of the Animals. I mean, granted, it might be considered more of a B ensemble cast, but it is
right.
it is kind of an all it's an all star cast nonetheless. You know, he's got
yeah, Dark, it was Dark Intruder. That's what I thought it was. Dark Intruder.
That's it. Yes, Dark Intruder. I'm
well,
sorry, I drew a blank on that
at,
one. Yeah.
Wasn't that the
Gardler,
it was supposed to be a TV
Grizzly,
pilot, I think, and it failed.
Yes, it was, but it was released in theaters. Universal released it on a double bill with the Nightwalker with Barbara Stanwyck. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, look
but
at
it's
the
a good
three
film.
Main
it's
guys,
really good.
In Grizzly. That is like a B-level great cast of greatness. Christopher George. Andrew Prine.
Richard Jackal.
Richard Jackal, whatever. But
Richard Jackal
yeah,
and Hyde, yeah.
I mean, that's like a B-movie drive-in, all-star A-list cast in Grizzly.
Yeah, definitely.
Same with Day of the Animals, too.
Yeah, Day of the Animals.
Except that Day of the Animals has an odder setup, but it's like the ozone's going bad. This group of people go up on ozone, and animals start kicking their butt for no reason.
there is a reason they've lost their mind.
Yeah.
So, I believe it's the ozone layer being gone, and it's the sun's rays that are coming through that's causing the animals to go crazy. So that's kind of the reason why, right there. You know.
They don't need an explanation.
No, they really don't. You're right. That's for sure. But, yeah, so it's a fun film. It's a great way to end a night of animals out of control, absolutely. Day of the Animals is another final feature of the evening, which is something that really absolutely should not be missed. It's another great film. So, you know, you're looking at all the movies this entire weekend. There's just so many different types. They're so good for so many reasons. It's really hard to pick out the one you would think would be the best one for the weekend. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, it is.
For me, the most fun is 2000 Maniacs, Grizzly, and Shrieking Mutilated.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I mean, I'm partial to Shriek, of course, because I'm a big fan of that movie. But, I mean, there's just so much good coming out of this whole experience. We have such a great selection. It's so diverse. It's something that there's something there for everybody at the show, and that's what I like about the show. You know, it's a really feel good September weekend with such a large variety of different films. It's going to appeal to like everybody. There's something in there for everyone. You know. That's a good thing.
I would hope so. Especially if you like psychotronics and driving the horror science fiction. Yeah, for sure. This is
too, Riverside has a nice selection of food coming up this time again as well. Definitely. It's listed on the page. Make sure that, you know, you come by our
don't they
our
have a funnel cake a funnel
stuff.
Cake flight?
I believe so, yeah. Is it a pumpkin funnel
cake?
Yeah,
you would like that, the funnel cake flight.
Right, for sure.
Which
yeah,
means, you know, you try a different, yeah.
Varieties of different soups and chili stuff. It's going to be the Peruvian pizza, of course.
Didn't they say something about funnel cake sampler pack?
Yeah, that's the flight, yeah.
It's called a flight. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Right.
It's like flight. That's an expression used for, like, it's mostly used for, I guess, wine and drinks when you have, like, different tasting. So I think that was kind of like, I think that was a cool idea that they call it that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice. It's gonna be some good stuff there, too. So, and we have, coming back to Vend, we'll have Creepy Classics. Selling their usual movies and shirts, and then we have Richie from Monster Mart back, and he's going to be doing some really nice plates for your car. They're already looking like they're going to sell like crazy, in fact. The interest
yeah, well,
replica
license plates for decoration. Don't put them on your car as your license, because you'll probably get a ticket.
Yeah. And he'll be doing some other stuff.
The unknown comic's going to be there.
No, he's not.
How will you know
we'll
if the unknown comic will be there?
Well,
because he's unknown.
We're pretty much sold out of shirts. We have some shirts from the April show that will be available. And
big
shoes. Shirts for sale from this show, but the majority of the shirts for this show are gone. They sold out online. There's really nothing left. I mean, it was an overwhelming response.
Well,
those are the folks that are going to get shirts, and people that come and think they're going to buy them there are not going to get them this year, so it's not going to happen because they sold out. So also, I want to mention, too,
the Grizzly poster, as is one of the best images to have on the shirt. That is just cool.
Absolutely.
That's
designed,
the centerpiece.
That's a good point. And that was designed by Bill Van Ren again. He did a great job. And then the trailer was done by Lance Parkin, who's a local Pittsburgh director. Shout out to him for his being part of the family and helping us out, as always. And, of course, I wanted to get this in here because George has quite a bit to say about it. George has put together another spectacular
raffle basket.
Yeah.
Go for it, George. What happens with the raffle basket?
Well, it's like every time we gotta, I gotta do a raffle basket, and I have to do a raffle basket because I'm told I have to do a raffle basket. It's like, you know, I'll be scrambling for an idea, and I didn't know what to do, and I'm like, you know, it just kind of came together. I'm like, well, let me just kind of, you know, look at the films we're showing and just do stuff based off of. So, you know, you got Impulse with William Shatner. So, like, all right, let me do some, you know, there's got to be some Shatner fans out there, even though it's not exactly horror. But so we have some Shatner Amigo figures. We got a Shatner autograph. And I guess we could also include the Impulse Deluxe edition from Grindhouse Releasing is in there too, starring him, of course.
Yeah.
And I even managed to get a hold of because Harold Oddjob Sakata, Oddjob being his nickname from the James Bond film Goldfinger, I found a authentic Oddjob figure from the 60s in the original packaging in really nice shape. So that's going in there. And then we got some Blu-rays. And then there's this really elaborate, not elaborate, but you know, yeah, pretty cool kind of diorama setup of the, you know, animal.
Yeah, it's an original. It's a George
monsters.
Original. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we got to, like a little piranha in there, and a grizzly bear, and a yeti, and a cheetah, I just think it's a cheetah from like, you know, to represent Day of the Animals. So.
Yeah,
it's
a lot
a nice
of fun.
Thing. There's pictures of it on the community page if you want to take a look.
Absolutely.
And like I said, the proceeds for this basket raffle, they're $1 a ticket, and then 25 chances for $20 will be selling the raffle tickets both Friday and Saturday, and then the one lucky winner will be announced before the start of the movies on Saturday night. And all the proceeds do go back to the booking of the film. So we have, you know, I hope it does pretty well because April, there's some pretty big plan. April's going to be pretty, I would say, definitely big and unique. We have a lot of good plans for. There's a lot of big plans for April. So.
Yep.
This will all go to help out with the April show.
And you didn't mention what I consider the biggest part of that box set, which is the $50 H.G. Lewis set, which has every one of his movies except for... I mean, you got basically like $80 worth of Blu-rays counting the other one that you got. Just go from there, people. Spend all the money, you know, so don't be afraid to buy like $3 to $5 in tickets because it's going to be worth it.
Yes, spend the whole $5. You'll get $5.
Oh, I know. There's always this more than one. That one guy like bought like $20 one year I was there for the box set. It was like the amount of tickets he got was tall as him.
I have news for you. Sometimes people buy $60 worth of tickets.
And you know what? One of the most valuable things about tours is the buy one get one free KFC sandwich coupon, which we have included with the purchase of the raffle.
Oh
tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah, the second prize is like an expired Arby's coupon. Yeah.
Pop, I can't breathe.
But the H.G. Lewis box set has every one of his movies in 4K, except for the stuff that they can't find. And the only two big ones that aren't in there are his non-horror ones. Year of the Yahoo and the Blast Off Girls.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. So, good stuff there, Steve. Very happy, actually. Very happy.
And
so.
Will it be camping again this year?
Always.
It's always camping. We invented camping.
Yeah.
Why was there not?
The Riverside.
No, you didn't.
The Riverside
the
came up with
the. Driving on the other side of PA, they invented camping.
When?
Okay.
Well, for these events, I believe we did.
Yeah.
And we've had camping. We were actually just talking about this earlier today. We've been doing camping for this event since I think the second or third one, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah, it's got to be some years now. Yeah.
15, 16 years we've been doing camping before, and any other drive-ins started doing that. So.
For the horror events, actually.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think there was any horror.
The Riverside made available, and it was a great thing. I mean, you know, you can camp out and you can see the movies for the weekend. You can leave your tent there.
Yeah, that was their idea, to give the free breakfast.
Yeah,
and it turned out wonderful.
They're still doing this too, right? Absolutely.
No,
so.
it's great. It brings a whole different dynamic to the whole thing, you know.
Yeah, it's a quality experience you're paying for, which is not what you find at a lot of the other drive-ins. That's not from personal experience, because neither of us have time to attend anything with our regular jobs and, you know, whatever. And just we never hear good stories about camping at other drive-ins. We just don't. It's a horror story. It's either a porta-potty filled full of dirty shit and piss or mud or bugs or just misery, and
a total lack of interest.
The Riverside's not as bad at all. Far from it, in fact. They offer a nice, clean campground, a nice, beautiful, huge free breakfast, which I guarantee you is not being offered anywhere else. So it's a quality experience. You're not.
No, I think the other drive-ins offer pick your own berries.
Yeah.
Pick your own berries. So there you
go. They put
pick
out
your own
tumbleweed. If you pick the right one, you don't get poisoned.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
that's the difference.
We're looking forward to it. So if you have one question to ask us before we go, Steve, what would that question be?
Yeah. How many more years do you see yourself doing it? Because I have to get up there for the Robbie Benson show. That's
I don't
the
know.
One
next,
that I have to be there for.
Next year will probably be the last year because we're all getting tired. And
if I had a dollar for every time that was said, I'd be retired by now.
Yeah. Well, on the years, I know Robbie Benson on Facebook, and I will make sure he's there to sing the song from Ice Castle as the final.
He wasn't even the one
blast
saying
at the
it. He didn't even sing that song. He didn't sing that song. Though.
I
that
know.
Was
well, he
could
sing it anyway.
Yeah. He could just sing it anyway.
That's cute. Okay. Sounds like a plan, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, guys, for being. Well, mostly no. Just thank you, guys, for putting this on for so long and having it keep being so good almost every year.
Yeah, we hate to see it end every year. I mean, you know, it's always fun prepping for it, and then it happens, and there's always that inevitable feeling about halfway through the whole thing where you go, wow, it's already halfway over, you know, and, you know, it's just highly enjoyable. It's something that we enjoy doing. I think that your heart has to be in what you're invested in, and you have to really believe in your product and you know, what you're giving folks and what the takeaway is going to be that they'll take with them elsewhere that inspires them to do their own shows or, you know, anything like that. So there's so much that comes out of this. There's so much, you know. It's a very positive feeling, I think, at least for me anyway, you know.
Here's a question for Steve. If you could choose one movie for us to bring back that we already showed in the past, what would it be?
Mask of the Red Death.
That's a good one. That's good.
It's an interesting choice.
That's a great movie. It's a classy choice. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
You never know.
So, no, not at all. Not in the least. So, but all kinds of good stuff coming up in the week. And good weather.
And the
we'll
one that I beg you never to bring back
today,
is Son of Dracula. Please never show
what?
That again.
Don't worry.
Son
don't
of
worry.
Dracula.
There's no. Don't worry. You have nothing to fear. We won't bring that back.
What's that?
That was an asshole spot for sure.
Yeah.
Son of Dracula. The
Dracula.
The Harry Nilsson.
Definitely.
The Ringo Starr Harry Nilsson thing directed by Freddie Francis, which is a curiosity, but it's just very odd, and it's like one of those films I don't think worked well at the drive-in at all. But you know, definitely not something you see all the time because it's not out there really.
No, that's for sure. Definitely.
George, now that I've got you here, what do you think of the upcoming Peter Cushing set that, what company is putting that out? Isn't that like
Severin.
Synapse or is
Severin.
That Arrow?
No,
Severin.
It's Severin.
Yeah,
and,
Severin.
No, I'm very happy about it because, you know, it's got some oddball films. It's not all horror. And, you know, Peter Cushing is my favorite actor. And it's going to be a nice collection with extras. I had known about it for a long time, and I couldn't say anything in public, but I had gotten a heads up, and I was working with the head of Severin. You know, he kind of like let me gave me a sneak peek at the Bloodsuckers transfer because he's got, you know, some stuff in there that's never been shown in any version before. Been released on home video, so I'm happy about it. I'm definitely very happy about it.
Is this as close as we're print?
What's that?
The legendary Doctors Wear Scarlet print, the one they keep saying that all the books keep saying, oh, this is the though they took this film and mutilated it. And turned it
well,
in
they mutilated it in the sense that they added all this stuff to it, you know, much like you know, going back to Humanoids from the Deep, they added like all this kind of sensationalism and these orgy scenes and stuff like that, very psychedelic, a lot of nudity, a lot of.
What movie was
you know,
that?
Bloodsuckers, aka Doctors Wear Scarlet, aka Incense of the Damned.
I have that on DVD. That's kind of a rare movie.
Yeah, well, it's
so.
It's going to be in that Cushing Curiosity.
Right, right.
Is it Cushing Curiosities or yeah, whatever it's called.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they also announced the new 4-disc Jess Franco's Count Dracula, which I'm one
right.
of those like that more than most. Everyone, like, a lot of reviewers always go like,
eh,
this is not that good.
Well, that was Christopher Lee's. I think Christopher Lee's on record saying that was his favorite portrayal of Dracula of all the Hammer films and everything he did. He enjoyed that one the most.
I never had a big problem with Count Dracula. I mean, you know, I could see the flaws, but I'm not going to, like, go, you know.
Right.
You got to take
right.
a film for what it is and. I've always enjoyed that film, and I'm very much looking forward to this new restoration from the original negative or whatever. Because we actually showed it last year at the Christopher Lee centenary.
Yep, we did.
So
absolutely.
I wouldn't have shown it if I didn't, you know, like it.
Yeah, if you didn't believe.
Well, that's not true. I do show movies I don't like, but I you know, it was, again, it was just. It was a Dracula movie. We didn't show. It was I enjoyed seeing it on the screen. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, Franco's funny because just Franco fans are funny because it's like you see people put you know you see like you talk about one of his like really exploitive you know say sex films you know sexploitation movies right and. You know, somebody knocks it and they're like, oh, no, this is like the most, this is a masterpiece, isn't that? And then something like Count Dracula, you have like these, you know, like Steve is saying, like people put it down, it's like Hammer fans going, oh, it's not that good, It's like, you know, come on, just enjoy it for what it is and shut up. I'm just you know, fandom is crazy now, so a lot of complainers, you know, just like what you like and hate what you hate and shut up.
It's like all the people that are griping about Last Voyage in the Meter because they're like, well, that wasn't a Dracula movie. That wasn't a Dracula movie. Where did they get this from? I'm like, it's in the book. Have you ever read the book?
Actually, I thought the movie was excellent. When Tim and I went to see that film, and we thought it was spectacular. I think it was a great throwback to. I don't think it was so much like a Hammer film. I mean, I can see where people make that comparison, but I love the fact it was a period piece. They put some good money into it. There were good actors. It was very well directed. It sort of had a feeling of the movie Alien, in my opinion, because of how he was hiding in the ship, picking them off one by one. I mean, I thought the film was excellent. I thought it was one of the best movies compared to all this ridiculous shit like the, you know, The Nun 2 and all this fucking garbage. And it is garbage, these films with these jump scares and people getting pulled into the darkness and Satan this and Satan that. You know, Hollywood and the horror fans today are just literally trapped in a formula, and it's the same shit over and over again. And I talk about this all the time when I do your shows and I do other people's shows. You know,
yeah.
The films are not good, period. People, they're good for the audiences and they make money, but these are people that don't have a history of experience with horror, so they're not going to know what's good and what isn't good, in my opinion. You know, it's just what's driving the sales. Last Voyage of the Meter is one of the best movies to come out in a decade or more, so see it by all means.
And if you've read the book, it's like a whole chapter where it talks about the voyage of the Demeter.
Right. Well, it's a good film. It reminded me a lot of the Frank Langella Dracula is what it reminded me of, sort of. I think the film was extremely good. So. Yeah, okay. Steve, do you have like a fart machine there too? Because I think that would just be even more.
No.
Okay. Why do I feel like I'm looking inside your head?
I don't know, because I don't know where the heck that sound is coming from.
Well, George, are you ready to call tonight?
I guess so.
And this is all, and the Monster on the Fall is always a great way to start off your drive, your Halloween season.
Yes.
So
that's right. Even though
come
it's
out
still
this
summer.
Week.
If anybody listens to this, besides, well, I don't know, besides, I can't, I'm not, my relatives don't even want to listen to this. If anybody listens to this. It's the Drive-In Super Monsterama this weekend, Friday and Saturday, September 22nd and 23rd at the Riverside Drive-In in Vandegrift, PA, outside Pittsburgh. It is an event that's been going on since 2007, and we have a retro horror weekend that you will not want to miss. This is the one, the original, the horror spectacular chiller monster marathon at the drive-in that started the whole nationwide trend. You want to come to this?
Yeah,
definitely. All
often
right,
imitated, never duplicated.
Never.
No, it's like
never.
It's like it's like there's a British invasion and we're the Beatles. It's like somebody invented rock and roll and I'm Little Richard. So
there you go.
Just think
yeah.
about that.
Good guys.
And
I have a big head, so.
Night, everybody, come go to the Monsterama this weekend if you can.
And somebody bring Steve there.
I wished.
Just put him in a in
my
like
body's
one of those.
My body is still like just, no, maybe another
year,
buddy, or otherwise,
just tie him to a stretcher and and then just rope the car to a station wagon and drive them in.
Exactly. And get it out.
Hey, and that'd be a good way to come in there. Blood
we'll give you free funnel cake.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks again, Steve. I always appreciate coming on the show.
Always appreciate having you guys, and every one of us fans appreciates Monsterama. And
you sure do.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, good night. See you guys. Bye.
Good night, sweetheart, when it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart, when it's time to go home.
I hate to leave you, but I really must say, oh,
good night, sweetheart, good night.
Good night, sweetheart, when it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart, when it's time to go home. I hate to leave you, I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart, good night. Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Baby, I just can't get right. Well, I hate to leave.